In the modern game of football, we sort of take huddling up in between each play for granted. The offenses do it, the defenses do it, except for those no-huddle situations. But we have footballarchaeology.com's Timothy P. Brown that's going to tell us about a time before huddling, where it came from, and the history and origin of the event of the huddle. Coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another date with footballarchaeology.com's Timothy P. Brown. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. Look forward to chatting about huddling today. Huddling.
Okay. I hope you didn't say cuddling, because that wouldn't be very appropriate for football.
I like cuddling. Just you're probably not the guy I want to do it with.
I don't blame you.
You may have different thoughts, but
you're not my first choice either. So we agree on something tonight. That's great. But yeah, Tim, you have a title that you had out back about a little over a year ago called Gather Round Boys, A History of Huddling, in one of your tidbits. And boy, we'd really like to hear the history of this application in football.
Yeah, so I actually, you know, sometimes you look back and you, I hadn't looked at this tidbit for a while. And I realized I really, this was one of my favorite tidbits. You know, I mean, part of it is, I really like the stories where you kind of figure out how something developed, and the function it serves today is not the function it served when it first came about. And so huddling is a classic example of that. The other is just that it was one of those tidbits where, while we can't get anybody to see the images that were in the tidbit or that are in the tidbit, I would just encourage people to go out and take a look at it, because, you know, it's just one where I was able to find some great images of the different types of huddles. So huddling, you know, there's the first huddling that people have been able to identify was, you know, Gallaudet College in Washington, D.C. It's a, you know, college for the people, you know, hearing impairments. And so, you know, they actually, they used to go up, you know, this is back in the time before teams huddled. They would come up to the line of scrimmage, and the quarterback or a captain, somebody on the team, would yell out signals. So, you know, you read all the time in the old newspapers about signals. And it was just, it's kind of like audibles, but essentially, you know, what teams did is that they had just like a sequential list of numbers for all their plays. And, you know, whereas, like, I don't know, you know, it used to be like, if it ended in an even number, it was a play to the right, or if it was odd, it was a play to the left. And, you know, sometimes the first number told you, you know, a 42 meant that it was going to go to the left halfback or the right halfback or whatever. You know, there were different kind of systems that made sense. But back early on, it was either just a random string of words, or it was just a sequence of numbers. So if you were a player, you had to know that what you did on an 83, because that's all you heard. Now, they would hide those numbers in the signaling. They'd like do a string of four numbers or something, and one of them was a code saying the next number is the one that is actually the play. So anyways, that's kind of the way it worked. You know, a couple teams here and there huddled, but pretty much nobody huddled until Illinois and Bob Zupke changed that in 1921, and they began huddling. But back then, they didn't initially huddle. I mean, part of the purpose was, you know, Zupke would claim part of it was to get everybody to settle down and be able to listen to It was typically a quarterback then who would call the play. But it was mostly the advantage of huddling was that was a period when, you had the Minnesota shift, you had the Heisman shift, you had the Notre Dame shift. So teams would line up at the line, one play at end, they just line up on the line of scrimmage. But oftentimes they would line up in a, say, a pre-lineup, like a traditional T, and then shift. There'd be a moment where they'd shift to unbalanced right or unbalanced left, whatever it was. And then they'd, there wasn't, while the rule said everybody had to pause before starting the play, there was no length of time that they had to pause. So basically teams would shift in and boom, ball would be snapped and you'd catch the defense, off guard. So the huddle did the same thing. They would call the play in the huddle. So let me go back. A team that was shifting would line up, call their play, and then at some point they'd shift and then execute the play. What huddling did was they would call the play in the huddle, and then everybody would quickly run the line of scrimmage, get lined up, and boom, the ball was snapped. So it had kind of the same advantage of that pre-snap shift, but it actually happened even faster, right? And the defense couldn't react. They just couldn't shift quick at anywhere near as quickly as the offense, could line up. So that's when huddling came about in 1921. And then teams started applying it. There was a lot of people saying we shouldn't have it. It delays the game. It does this, that. But ultimately, it proved effective. And so they started using it. And in like 26 or so, they implemented a rule that said it, you had to pause for at least one full second after the shift or after coming out of the huddle. So then that kind of, calmed things down a bit. But then what, to me, one of the fun things and where these images come into play is that, best as I can, that I could kind of figure out, there were like three or four different styles of huddling. So there was the first huddles were almost all what people called a closed, a circular, a ring, or an oval huddle. So that was where everybody kind of forms a ring. Sometimes a quarterback is kneeling down kind of inside the ring, and the linemen tended to be in the front, closest to the, facing away from, but closest to the line of scrimmage. The ends were kind of at either end of this little ring, and then the backs were on the other side facing towards the line. And so that was pretty normal, for a long time. That was kind of the classic huddle. Then people kind of said, well, if we're going to do all this huddling, we should come up with a better way to huddle. And so, as far as I can tell, Bucknell kind of got it started in 33, but people like USC used it in World War II and da da da. And it was called either a V or a triangle huddle. And so the way that worked was if you think of a V or a triangle, there's kind of like the fat end or the open end of fat end of a triangle or open end of a V. And so what they do is they'd have the quarterback at the open end along with one other back. And then the rest of the folks would be in, kind of in a V shape, typically facing toward the line of scrimmage, with the quarterback and the back look, facing away from the line of scrimmage. And they could call the play. Most of the team could see the defense, see what they're doing. And, so that was kind of a cool way to do it. The next one that came along late 40s, best as I can tell, there's a guy named Tom Nugent who was a coach at VMI, and then later he was Lee Corso's coach at Miami. And so he had what was called either the open classroom or typewriter huddle. And so that was one where, and it's very, teams still use this one, commonly today. Quarterback faces away from the line of scrimmage. Sometimes they turn it around, but he's facing away from the line of scrimmage. And then initially they'd have like the lineman facing the quarterback bent over, and then the backs and ends were facing towards the line of scrimmage standing up, right? And now mostly, everybody stands, but that's really probably the most common huddle today, I believe.
I see a lot of teams are resurging. They're doing that, but the quarterback is standing behind the linemen who are facing the defense, which is kind of interesting. He's talking in the ear holes or something, I guess.
In some way, to me, it's always made more sense to have the quarterback facing, the defense. I mean, he's the one who's calling the play, so potentially he can spot something. But, again, this all is based on the assumption that the quarterback is calling the plays, right? As opposed to a coach on the sideline calling the plays. And so all these huddling things were happening when quarterbacks called the plays. And, then those rules went away in the early 60s. So coaching from the sideline, that whole thing disappeared in the early 60s. And so all of a sudden, some people like, Sam, I believe it's Weich or Weich, White. I don't even know how to pronounce his last name.
Sam Weish.
Weich. So, Bengals coach in the 80s, he's really the guy who pioneered the no huddle offense. And it's just like, why do we have them huddle anymore? We'll just put them somewhere in the line of scrimmage and signal in the general formation so that they can get the right spot, and then they can watch our signal, the baseball style signals from the sideline. And then they've used numbers, all kinds of coaches' assistants on the wrists, and the different signage that teams hold up. So you got all that stuff going on, in terms of just ways to signal in plays. But big difference from the days of quarterbacks calling the plays versus the coaches calling the plays. So now, just one other thing that I just wanted to add, that I mentioned it in the tidbit, but I just this is going to make some, if there's coaches listening to the podcast, some of them are going to be angered by what I'm about to say, or just
Oh,
think
wait
I'm.
a second. Coach is getting angry?
Yeah, well, it happens once.
I've never heard of this.
Okay. So one of the things they used to get angry about, they used to spend all kinds of stupid practice time perfecting, was the huddle. Coaches would just go nuts about, you have to stand up the right way, or you have to snap out of the huddle. I know, at least in my high school conference, I remember there was a team that when they left the huddle, the linemen, so they would huddle so that like the right tackle was on the left side of the huddle, and then he would lead people out, and like the right guard would be next to him. And then so they had this like chain thing where they kind of came out in formation, and it was just a waste of damn time. And so coaches used to just spend all kinds of unnecessary time trying to get a really nice, neat huddle. It was like making sure your socks are pulled up, or whatever. It's just like either you make the play or you don't. Either you follow the play call or you don't. You execute your assignment or you don't. I don't care what you look like. And I mean, thankfully, like my high school coach was a guy who was in many ways, a crusty old dude, but he didn't care what color you were, what your background was, what you wore. He just either ran fast, you didn't, you either jumped far or you didn't, and you either made the tackle or you didn't. So he didn't, concern himself much with what I consider the stupid stuff that a lot of coaches hang on to.
I had a coach, I think it was must have been grade school. He was very anal. We were the old, quarterback would he after he get done calling a play, he'd say, ready, and we'd all go break and have to clap, and break the huddle that way. And which I think a lot of teams still do. And if we didn't all clap or he couldn't hear us, like if you're in practice, he's standing behind the huddle, he doesn't hear you say break. Oh my God, it was an ass chewing coming for and probably some laps being run. So you're right, you're anal.
I mean, I get, being anal, but that's just being anal about the wrong thing, as far as I'm concerned. But,
Yeah,
you know.
especially when you're in the fourth quarter in a game in August when it's like 85 degrees, and the last thing you want to do is be yelling break and clap, and you just want to, try to get through the rest of this game because you're sweating bullets and you're tired.
Yeah, well, again, at least any negative comments about this will come to you because this is on your podcast, not on my site.
That's true. So, I've got a couple interesting comments from some guests that I've had over the years. Some claims, we're talking, 1921, with the, this being formalized by Zupke, which is like a few years before Red Grange played with Illinois, interesting enough. But we have an author, Jennifer Taylor Hall, who wrote a book on Amos Alonzo's stag, and she has some claims in her book that gives credit to Stagg possibly being one of the innovators of the huddle, using it here and there, not as a formal, every play type of thing. And one I just heard recently, we had an author, Sam Hatcher, who wrote the book Heisman's First Trophy. And it was about the Cumberland Georgia Tech debacle, the 222 to nothing game, where the Cumberland players were really didn't want to go up to the line any faster than they had to, so they were sort of hanging back and catching their breath, licking their wounds, whatever you want to call it, before going up. So he gave some nods to that. Just thought I'd mention some of those things, but like I said, they were not formalized huddles like you're talking that happened in the 20s.
So this is like almost anything else. So Amos Alonzo Stagg, who was an absolute coaching pioneer and stud and invented all kinds of things, he also gets credit for like 75 things that he didn't.
Yeah, right.
And so I mean, all I can say is that I've done enough research on this stuff that I'm pretty darn confident that Zupke is the first one who used it on a regular basis. I know there was a guy named I want to say Hargis. I think I have it. Well, anyways, he was a coach at Oregon State. He was a guy from like Emporia or one of those schools in Kansas. And he ended up at Oregon State in 1919. And the evidence is he used a huddle in at least one game, right? There's something unique about that. So, yeah, I mean, there were some people who periodically or one time or whatever used it, but in terms of really using it systematically, using it game after game, using it play after play, I mean, as far as I know, no one has any evidence of anybody other than Zupke being the first one to do that. So, if somebody else has more information, hey, get a hold of me on footballarchaeology.com and I will be happy to add a postscript.
Yeah, I wasn't
To
saying they were arguing with what you're saying. I was just
No,
because the huddle had a little bit of history, whether I don't have it confirmed or not, but I'm just saying they made mention of it in their writing. So it's just.
No, and yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of things like that. Like, when, who was, what was the first face mask? Okay, well, define face mask, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what really is a face mask?
Yeah.
What's the difference between the old nose guards, some of which became pretty huge, and a face mask? Or like, so what's a huddle? I mean, what does it mean to huddle? Right. So depending on how you define that, you might go, in a different direction. And I'm basically using huddling the way we use it today. Right.
Calling the play, you having a gathering to call the play is what, yeah. Okay. Well, very, very good. Interesting as always, Tim. We appreciate it. Now you have a lot of fascinating tidbits and pieces of information that sort of built on what we know of as football today and some of the elements of it in fo on football archaeology. Maybe you could share with the listeners how they can find your site and what to expect.
Yeah, just go to footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack, site or newsletter. You can just go there anytime you want, but also you can subscribe. You'll get an email every time that I open or that I create a new story. There's a paid version, there's an unpaid version. You can also follow me on Twitter, on Threads, or on the Substack app. And if you're somebody like, you can follow on the Substack app, and if you're somebody who wants to follow but not get the emails, well, you'll get it that way via Substack. So kind of whatever suits your fancy, whatever works for you.
All right. Well, very good. A very fascinating topic as always. And we really appreciate you coming on here and sharing with us. And love to talk to you again next week.
Very good. Look forward to seeing you.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.